This is the fifth episode where we're chatting to sheep farmers around the world, and today we're heading to Wales. We're going to chat to Sean Jeffrey about how he got his start into farming, what inspired him, and why everyone should be a sheep farmer, as well as the importance of networking and working together within the industry.
Thank you so much for jumping on. I have really enjoyed interviewing sheep farmers from around the world. So you're the next one off the rank. So you tell me about you. Where are you recording this from? Well, you're out in a paddock by the looks of it, but whereabouts in the world and who are you?
Yeah, so I'm Sean Jeffries, 27-year-old, new entrant into the industry. So I grew up in the city. Sort of I've got a little bit of farming in my family. That's what sort of drew me back in. But yeah, currently in West Wales, Carmarthenshire, farming a small farm, about 85 hectares of mixed hill and upland ground. So we just graze sheep. We got about 600 breeding ewes, only my second year on this farm. So yeah, entered a share farming agreement, 2 years ago. So yeah, we're in the growing stage. When I came here, it was like 350 ewes, and it was in relatively good heart, but you know, it was just sort of treading water, wasn't really going anywhere. Yeah, so we've not far off doubled the ewes already. Want to push on and secure more ground and keep more sheep as a plan.
Yeah, that's incredible. A new entrant to the industry, that's hard. That's hard to get your foot in the door. So initially, how did you decide, yep, I'm going to be a sheep farmer? And what was the first step you took?
So to be honest, it was sort of spending weekends and spare time with my grandparents. They had a little small holding. We work in acres, so I'm just trying to convert it to hectares for everyone to get.
Yeah, we can let them do the math. That's all right. Because you have... That's the incredible stocking density.
Their small holding was like 15 acres. So, you know, it was, yeah. And they had like 50 or 60 sheep. So I used to go up there on the weekends. That's where I got the bug then. And then sort of when I got to the end of school, I went to it's local to me now, but the Ag College was about an hour away. So, and as it happens, I've ended up now living in the area. And then went to uni then. I went to Harper Adams. I don't know if you're familiar with it. So yeah, 4 years there, including a year in industry, a placement year. Mm-hmm. So I came home. I worked for Hubby Key Cymru, so HCC. That's the levy board for red meat in Wales. So I was there for about 3 years working on sort of like government-funded projects. Like we were DNA testing sheep and performance recording and sort of working with vets, things like that. And then this opportunity came up then. So I saw this opportunity advertised, sort of this agency we've got over here, Farming Connect. It's like government funded. And they've got a project which sort of tries to link older landowners and younger farmers up together. And yeah, so just went ahead and here we are, 2 years
later. What an incredible project. So is it like an older generation farmer? And so they link you up, you start share farming with a young farmer. Is that how that works?
Yeah, it's basically like, it's like an online dating profile, right?
Yeah, so I love it. That's my kind of Tinder.
So you sign up, you provide all your details, you know, brief details. It's all anonymous as well. But like location, you know, sort of interest, number of stock you've already got, etc., what skills you've got. And then, so I don't know how it is now, but at the time it was sort of, it favored the landowner a little bit more. So when you put in for a farm, you don't know their name, and you don't know where it is. You know roughly, like you know the postcode, but you don't know any specifics. But like you've got, you know, they know everything about you. So you've got like send basically a CV. So yeah, that was a little bit daunting that, you know, you were sort of, you know, you were opening yourself up and, you know, being vulnerable to someone that you didn't know who they were. So, and you know, I don't know. I think it's just a farming thing and, you know, everything's a little bit secretive at the start. You know, you don't want to let on what you're doing. You don't want to tell too many people in case it doesn't come off. This actually was, I think, my second or third one that I applied for. So yeah, you know, the program wasn't perfect, and there was a lot of people on there, like a lot of like older landowners that they just wanted like a bit of a slave, really.
Mm.
You know, sort of they wanted like the penny and the pound. But yeah, sort of avoided them, and I managed to find, so Ian Rickman is the guy that owns this place, and really genuine bloke. Yeah, sort of couldn't have found anyone better to work with, to be fair. And how it worked out, so over here we've got the Farmers Union of Wales, so he was heavily involved in that. He's in his early 60s, you know, farmed here all his life. And then he'd sort of got a bit of a bigger role within the union, and he was deputy president at the time. And yeah, you know, I think in the back of his mind, he was thinking of running for president. And yeah, so that's what happened. So yeah, so he's president now. So not on farm much, but when he is here, he sort of, yeah, he helps me out as much as he can. He's, yeah, he's good.
That's incredible. Incredible story. Like, we just do not have, I don't think, anything like that here in Australia. And if we do, anyone listening, I hope send it through to me, because it's hard to get your foot in the door. So what's been the biggest challenge, do you think, as a first-generation farmer?
Capital, you know, without a doubt, because, you know, everything's expensive. And, yeah, you know, the land price is relatively strong at the minute, but, you know, it's sort of, it's startup costs. It's, you know, it's getting to that position where you're just rolling on from last year. And yeah, we're still in that position where we're having to borrow to fund things to get going, really. So, you know, we're sort of buying more livestock, and we've diversified into rearing dairy calves as well.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of costs going into them. So, you know, we're having to borrow a lot of money, basically. So yeah, that's the sort of biggest challenge, I would say. And you know, if you know, so as it is now, it's a 50-50 split on profit. But if I, you know, if I had to go and find money to pay rent or to pay a mortgage, then yeah, that you know, it would add a lot more pressure on when I, you know, when I'm starting off. Yeah, so that's probably the biggest issue.
So you were saying the land prices are good, but how's the year overall crops-wise, or just how's the season shaping up to be like for you guys over there at the moment?
In terms of farm gate prices?
Mm.
So milk's pretty good. Dairy farmers will tell you it's not good, but yeah, I know plenty of rich dairy farmers. Yeah, milk's good. I think they're over 40 pence now. And arable cereals aren't having a good time, and coupled with the weather. So basically, it's not far off rain for 12 months in a row over here. We had a little bit of respite in January, and then yeah, we did have a month sort of mid May to mid June. Yeah, we managed to get our silage and done that stuff then. But yeah, it's gone back wet again now. So it's pretty much, for about 10 of the last 12 months rained. So them arable guys are, yeah, they're under a lot of pressure. Our sheep were supposed to graze a lot of winter wheat last year, and it all failed. So yeah, they're having a hard time, in fairness to them. And yeah, the beef price is through the roof. Beef is absolutely mental. But yeah, so the lamb price is strong. So at the minute, it's about £3 a kilo.
Yeah,
That's live. I do sell a few dead, but not much. So live is what mainly what we do. So I wouldn't know the dead price right now, to be honest with you. But you know, sort of, I would imagine it's a global thing. You know, these lambs, they fluctuate so much. You know, they've dropped £20 in a week. So over here, quite fortunate with a relatively large sort of Islamic population in England, and you know, sort of mainland Europe is only a couple of hours away on a lorry. So our sheep trade is massively sort of geared up around the Islamic festivals.
Oh, it's so, trade, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So we would be quite strong at the moment. Huge demand. Yeah.
So and even though lambs have dropped back a little bit, so you know, yeah, they were not far off £4. A lot of good lambs were over £4. But yeah, they're back to around the £3 now. But the like cull ewes, I would call them, so like old sheep, cast ewes, they're really expensive.
Yeah.
Still. Yeah. So
I think we underestimate, I know here in Australia, people underestimate the influence of, we think about Christmas and the demand around Christmas, but there is other cultures, there is other religions that really heavily influence sheep. And I know in Ohio, I was speaking to a farmer and he said a lot of strong Greek, same as Islam, like, you know, really love their lamb. So it's one of their key markets. So how does it work where you are in selling those sheep? Where do you take them? Because it's a bit different to say here in Australia. Do you have a local sale yards, or how far away do you have to take your sheep? What's the process there?
So we're relatively lucky. We've got quite a few little local markets dotted about, sort of small little marts. Where they might,
how many sheep would pass through the local market a week, would you say?
So the closest one would only be about 500.
Yeah.
But then sort of you go an hour up the road and it's about 5,000. So yeah, sort of, you know, you go, if you go up to Welshpool, which is about 3 hours away, and it'll be 8 to 10.
Mm.
But we're quite lucky that the smaller markets have stayed open, most of them. So yeah, that's sort of generally where we would market our lambs anyway. We'd travel them to about an hour. Yeah, you'd usually go to one of two. So, Bilth Wells. Anyone who's ever been to the Royal Welsh Show will know Bilth Wells, and then a place in Talabont outside Brecon. So, basically, the closer to the English border you can move them, the more they're worth.
Mm.
But you know, it's obviously, you know, it's not free to get them there, and you know your time and everything as well. So yeah, it's a bit of a balancing act, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. What breed of sheep did you say you had?
So we run a couple of different flocks. So we've got a hill flock, but so those are a nucleus flock of ewes that graze common land, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they mix with everyone else's sheep, and it's a big biosecurity nightmare. But so we've got them. They would be like sort of an improved Welsh Mountain, and with a lot of Cheviot influence in them. So we got them. And then we buy a lot of rams from Innovis as well. So Innovis sheep breeding camp set up in Aberystwyth in Wales, sort of back in the day. And yeah, so we buy maternal tups from them, an Aberdale, they call them. So they've got the Inverdale gene in them.
Mm.
So then we... Yeah, the Inverdale gene's a prolificacy gene. And we keep the ewe lambs then as replacements for a terminal flock then. So, yeah, and we sort of just put textiles back on them.
Oh, I see. So you got like a bit of hybrid vigor there. This common flock, what do you mean? That is such a foreign concept to me here in Australia. I definitely, my neighbours don't like it when we run our sheep together. How does that work? So there's just common land where everyone can put their sheep, what, certain times of year or?
Yeah, so basically it's a big mountain range. So Wales is sort of, you know, has got a lot of mountains in it, a lot of common ground. So this mountain, I don't know who would own it, to be honest. Like it's in a national park, so they've got a lot of influence. So, you know, you've got to make sure you stay on the right side of the wardens and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so each farm in this sort of catchment area has got rights, and the rights are tied to the land. So you can't sell them or lease them or anything. They stay with the land that you farm. So we've got like about 500 rights. So yeah, we can send up to 500 adult breeding sheep. So that doesn't count the lambs. And yeah, so it's basically a big ring fenced range of, I think it's about 30,000 acres.
Wow.
And then, so the sheep are hefted. So hefted means they mostly stay in a specific area. And then it's the ewe's job is to teach the lamb that area. It's like they know their little home. quite cool, to be fair. I quite like it, and it's it doesn't cost us anything, and actually we get paid to graze it, so we get paid some environmental work up there.
So it's worth the biosecurity risk then. You just have to make sure they're heavily vaccinated and
yeah. So we'd abortion vaccinate Enzo and Toxo. They're on the clostridials. I recently just I don't know, is this, do you get Heptavac and Covaxin in Australia?
I'd have to look that up. We personally don't.
Yeah, so yeah. I changed the vaccines around a bit, but yeah, it costs a lot. Anyway, we check all the vaccines at them.
Yeah.
And then they get dipped twice a year as well. So,
and how does that problem? Does everyone do that together? Do you all go in together, muster them in together, dip them all together? Yeah, yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
So there's little clusters of, so there's like four or five of us. We'd all go up together and help each other out and get all the sheep in.
Mm.
And then in each little village or parish, they all do it by themselves because it's such a vast area. You know, you'd never get everything in one hit. So yeah, our sheep at the minute are down because they got shorn the other day. But the tup lambs will be weaned off now today. And then the ewes, the yearling ewes and the ewe lambs will go back up. And then we'll take all the ewe lambs off in like mid-August time. And then the ewes will be up there then till October. They'll come down to, you know, go with the tups. And then they'll go back up in May then. So we winter them at home. So the younger ewes would winter on like root crops. So we go Swedes. And then the older ewes then would just winter on silage. And then they lamb out on grass then.
So you don't lamb in barns where you are?
Some sheep do, but not the ones that go to the hill. No, they don't go outside. No.
Yeah, that's so cool. Is that been a thing for hundreds of years? Like, is it like a tradition associated with that? Yeah. And what happens if they miss a year in lambing? So those lambs don't have an understanding of where their home is. Can they ever catch up and learn from everybody else? Or do you have to make sure that they learn from their mothers?
Yeah, they really need to learn from their mothers. So the 2001, when we had foot and mouth over here, obviously I wasn't on this place, but Ian was farming it back then, and he told me that they didn't send anything up because the other side of the mountain range, they were culling.
Yeah.
So he didn't want that risk. But yeah, so, you know, 1 year, you know, now and again is not going to be the end of the world. But no, they mostly want to go up with their mums.
Yeah, okay. Now, like, where in regards to lambing, so it's if you're not lambing in barns, what are your biggest challenges around lamb survival?
Probably the weather. So
yeah,
so cold and wet this spring. Yeah, we lost quite a lot of lambs. We're running on about 25% mortality already.
Yeah, okay.
Which is quite grim. But sort of, you know, friends of mine have said that, you know, that they're sort of, some people are up to 35-40%. Schmallenberg, although we missed from Schmallenberg the virus this year. So I don't know how, have you seen it over there, but it's basically carried by midges. And then it came over from the continent, from Holland, I think. And the midges then bite the sheep. And if they bite the ewes at a specific time during pregnancy, they give them this virus and then the lambs will be deformed. So we had a little bit of it, but nothing major. But yeah, a good friend of mine who lambed early, and they lamb inside in sheds. Yeah, he lost like 25% just at lambing time. So
yeah,
but you know, that and blue tongue and things like that, that is just a bit of a, it's going to happen, you know, sort of every couple of years. And yeah, so when it happens, there's nothing you can do about it really. But yeah, the sort of the biggest thing would be the climate out of thought, because, you know, it's out of your control. You can't do anything about it. I'm most likely going to buy some native bred terminal tups this year. So try some Suffolk based ones, just because the texels, that they haven't quite got enough wool on them. Yeah, they were feeling the cold a little bit.
Yeah. So is there a strong network of young sheep farmers in your region? Like you talked about your friend, like how did you get roped into this program? And is there quite a few of you who are, you know, starting out Like, is there many like you, first generational farmers? And what about just young farmers in general?
Yes, Young Farmers Club, they're quite strong in the locality and quite strong, you know, not just throughout the country, but throughout the UK as well. So, yeah, young farmers play a big influence for a lot of people. I never did much of it, to be honest with you, but there's a lot of people that, they're sort of borderline obsessed with it, to be honest. And then, yeah, the NSA then, so the National Sheep Association, they've been running this next generation scheme. Sure to be not far off 10 years now.
Yeah.
And I'd seen a bit of it on social media and stuff. And a lad I went to uni with, I saw that he'd done it. And I think, yeah, it's every other year. So I had a chat with him and yeah, he said it was a good thing worth applying for. And then the year after that, I applied for it. And managed to get a space. So I think how it works is the NSA have got regions like all over the UK, and then they try and select, I think, is it two from each region then? Yeah, so there's a spread of us on the course from all over the UK. So yeah, it's a good mix of people and plenty of different things to learn, really.
And so what are your ambitions for the future? You talked earlier about developing your flock, and is the long-term goal to get your own a place? So what are you working towards?
To be honest, I'm not that fussed about buying a farm right now, because, you know, interest rates are so high and you know, it's I'm very careful, you know, not to put a noose around my neck.
Yeah.
So I'm not that fussed about that right now. Just expand the farm, expand, you know, my business. And that doesn't necessarily have to be through buying land. Sort of further joint ventures and renting ground and things like that. Yeah, so upscale, keep more ewes, but simplify the system and keep more sheep at the same labor input.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a big thing that I want to do. And then when we expand our dairy calf rearing enterprise then. So we're on our second year doing that.
Mm.
And the sheds are already there. We don't have to build any more sheds. We just have to sort of, you know, change things up a little bit and buy some gates and water fittings and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, expand that side of it as well. Because, to be honest, so, some days when the sheep have escaped everywhere and they've all mixed up and it's raining and the dog has run home because it doesn't want to work, I'd rather be in the calf shed sometimes.
Yeah, that is so fair. I think one of my questions is three words to describe yourself, which I do need you to answer because I ask it to everyone. But I think every sheep farmer needs patience thrown in there, because if we like it or not, you do need patience when working with livestock.
Oh yeah, massively. Yeah, especially when there's fences like I've got here. Yeah, no, patience is something that I lack a bit, unfortunately, sometimes, but I'm working on it.
You were saying when I first called you, you're on your morning routine. So what does that entail? You're on foot there. So do you just walk around checking your sheep, or what are you up to?
So just yard work in the mornings. So yeah, we've got just over 100 head of calves there. We're a very manual system, so nothing's automated. They're off milk at the minute now, thankfully. Yeah, so feeding them, bedding them down, sort of, you know, cleaning up and, yeah, general sort of stuff with them. I probably spend about 3 hours a day in the sheds there.
Yeah.
So, but my plan is to, yeah, if we get more in and just sort of automate it a little bit and, you know, yeah, spend a bit of money, and then, yeah, I'll be able to rear more calves in the same time. And that's the plan.
Yeah. Now, this is a big question, both us being young fit sheep farmers. What do you think some of the challenges, what are going to be our biggest challenges as an industry in the future?
I think that, you know, undeniably the climate is changing, because, you know, I said earlier on, you know, it's rained for nearly 10 months out of the last 12. And it's absolutely freezing. It's like, you know, it's the start of July and I've got a hoodie and jeans on. So yeah, that is happening. But, and I can't really comment on other countries because I don't know what's happening over there much, to be honest with you. But over here, you know, there's a big risk to upland farms at the minute in terms of carbon credits and planting trees and things like that. So unfortunately, our Labour government in Wales and Labour just won the UK election as well this morning. Just, you know, they're hell-bent on planting trees everywhere. They just think it's the silver bullet and it's going to solve everything. So that's a big risk to sheep farming in my country, because, you know, the government grants are not far off paying, you know, whether they're paying the planting costs and leaving money left over. And these forestry companies are you know, going up to £5,000-6,000 an acre. And, you know, just literally two farms over, whole farm gone for tree planting, because, you know, the way, you know, interest rates are and the challenges we're under, no one local wanted it. So no one could afford it. No one particularly wanted to take that financial pressure on. And some guy from England has just come up, bought it. You know, going to sell a house and a pony paddock.
Mm.
And yeah, you know, that's another farm gone. You know, it's another 1,000 lands less being sold. You know, it's, yeah. So over here, then that's the biggest risk I see. You know, we've got to adapt and you know, work towards sustainability. I'm trying to do that through lowering inputs, using less fertilizer, using less concentrate food, making more off grass. So we're going herbalays and red clovers and things like that. That's my plan. And I think that's the way the government should be supporting us. Yeah, so a bit of a rant, but...
It is a big challenge. I think we're up against a lot of different factors, and it does make it incredibly challenging. Here in WA, we've just had a live export, which is a huge market for our sheep. The government's just voted to phase that out over the next 4 years. And we sell, you know, a significant portion of sheep from WA, you know, go out there. So, no, it is a huge factor. And I think, I don't know what the answer is to that either. You know, I think there's just this huge disconnect that has gone so far now. So I don't know what the answer is. It's interesting to you guys. It's funny how you get paid to run your sheep on that shared land, but also trees are also at the same time better than sheep. So that's interesting.
They're trying to drive biodiversity as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you go for a walk around the corner of a plantation and there's no biodiversity there, you know, the pH of the streams is like, you know, it's like vinegar.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a blanket of darkness. Nothing lives there. So yeah, it's quite ironic, really.
Well, I suppose it's an ongoing argument for those in the livestock world, but we could argue that sheep or any hoofed animal, there's a place in the bigger picture when it comes to soil health and looking after the soil and that sort of, you know, breaks from crops.
And that's a bit of an opportunity, really. So there's not much arable farming in Wales. There's a little bit, but nothing major. But it's all over the border. And a lot of them guys now, the penny's dropping with them, that the benefits of sheep. And, you know, they're all sort of trying to, you know, cut the amount of, you know, sprays and things like that they're using, not only for their buyers, but also for their pockets as well.
Yeah.
So, a lot of them guys are wanting sheep now. But the only issue is, there's no one over there that knows what they're doing with them. So, you know, you can sort of, you know, you can move them like 6 hours each way in a lorry, you know, and I'm not going down there every week to check them. Yeah, the opportunity for sheep grazing is there, you know, especially, you know, in the winter, but it's just having the skilled people there they're not quite there yet. But, you know, in the same breath, like I wouldn't, you know the first thing about growing an arable crop. So, you know,
absolutely. Yeah.
If there's no livestock in the area, then, you know, the skilled people aren't going to be there yet. You know, I'm sure in time, you know, they will. So, yeah, that's an opportunity anyway.
Speaking of skilled labour, I'm just interested with your communal farming, but also your, you know, your non-communal farming, how shearers, Do you guys go in and shear them yourselves, or what? You just said they've just been shorn. So how does that work?
Contractors. So shearing over here is much different to with you and the Kiwis. So like, well, they turned up with us to do the second bunch a quarter to six in the night.
Oh.
Yeah, and like they were shearing to like 10 o'clock, and then they'll go home. And they'll call it McDonald's on the way home. And and then they'll start again then at 7 the next day. It's just, yeah, they work hard in fairness to them. But because our farms are much smaller and, you know, we've got less sheep, you know, they want to fit in as many customers a day. And they just tow these shearing trailers around with them. And then they came off the axles and it's just like a big pen then. Yeah, so that's how it works. We're paying I think it's about £1.10 a head.
Yeah.
I think it's about that. We haven't had the bill this year, but it was £1.10 last year.
To those who are listening, they'll probably be listening on a tractor, so they'll have to convert that over. But yeah, shearing costs are rising for us in Australia, the price per head. I know it's definitely getting more expensive. So it's another factor. Our wool market's not that strong at the moment, nor is our sheep market overall. So it's an interesting time to be in sheep here in Australia. But yeah, I find that whole concept of running the sheep together just so fascinating. Is there any blues over lambs or anything like that? Do you argue over whose lamb belongs to what?
No. So everything's got to be tagged.
Yeah.
And then we call them pitch marks. I don't know, like a brand in iron dipped in paint and then pressed on the sheep.
Oh, okay.
So each farm has got, you know, its own pitch mark. And then also they get ear marks. So they cut shapes out of their ears when they're small lambs. Yeah, so no, there's no arguing over that. Sadly, the biggest challenge up there is theft. So, you know, there are some sheep that go up and don't come home. Horrific cases, really. You hear some people that, you know, they've lost hundreds, but touch wood, we weren't too bad this year. On our first gather now for shearing, we had, like, including the lambs and everything, say there was like 250 up there and 9 didn't come home.
Yeah,
so I can live with that. But yeah, last year 40 didn't come home. Some of them are gonna die, yeah, but
yeah.
I you know, it yeah, it does, sadly, that is an issue up there, really.
Now, my next question is the hardest. I usually start off with this one, but we just got straight into the sheep chat. Three words to describe yourself.
Oh, I don't know, maybe the listeners can come up with three words after hearing me go on.
We've decided all sheep farmers need patience, but you said that isn't a great word for you.
Okay, then impatient. That would be one. Committed, you know, I'm committed to what I'm doing here. We're not making much money at the minute because, you know, we're upscaling and we're growing. But I'm committed to the long picture here. And then I would say passionate. I was a bit of a cliche, but I genuinely love. I hate the sheep farming yesterday, but generally speaking, most days I love it. And yeah, I can get quite defensive. I get quite sort of triggered when, and this is something that I need to work on, you know, when I see sort of farmer bashing and things like that. And, you know, my sheep are being blamed for you know, all of Wales' climate problems, when, you know, they're dumping English nuclear waste off our coast and there's planes flying like overhead like all day every day. So yeah, I get quite irritable about things like that. But yeah, impatient, passionate and committed, I would say, yeah.
Well, I think you have to be passionate though to just decide on, you know, right, I'm going to be a sheep farmer and work this hard to make that happen. What did your parents say when you were like, righto, no, I'm not following in your footsteps. I'm going to do something completely different here and go farming.
Yeah, I was about to bring it up now. So my mum just thinks it's such a stupid thing to do. because because, you know, the hours involved, you know, such unsocial hours. You're basically like you're on call 24/7. And, you know, so it's a big commitment. So she thinks that's a silly thing to do. And, you know, she often says, oh, you know, why can't you just be normal and go and work a 9-to-5 and just, you know, get paid at the end of the month? Just be normal. But no, I don't want to. I like farming too much for that. Yeah. So to be honest, and if they had their way, they wouldn't have me farming. But at the same time, you know, they've supported me and helped me as much as they can, because they know, you know, that's what makes me tick. That's what I want to do. So yeah, so I couldn't ask for more from them, to be honest. But yeah, they do. They don't get it. They can't understand why someone would.
I think some people, you know, they just don't. You either, I don't know, you get it or you don't. Like, there's some people who could think of. And it's something, nothing worse than living on a property and working with livestock every day. But I do, there's something about it. There's, yeah. Unless you get it.
You know, for me, it's a community of people, you know, so like, yeah, some days, you know, you get daunted that, you know, you've got a lot of stock to handle and, you know, and you've got crap infrastructure and you're going to be there, you know, doing it on your own all day. But then like, you know, the following day, then if you like, especially with us, you know, up on the hill and things like that, if you're working with other people, you know, working with your neighbors and having fun, yeah, that makes it all feel better. Like, we're quite lucky over here, and you know, our neighbors still help quite a lot, and you know, and we help them. So, like, you know, when we're, you know, harvesting grass and stuff, you know, if there's rain on the way, you know, all of a sudden you'll have a couple of like 70-year-olds turn up on their old craft out tractors and, you know, desperate to help you and, you know, get them in before the rain. And yeah, so there's a good community spirit. And I imagine that community spirit is all over the world within agriculture. So yeah, that's what I like the most, to be honest.
Well, I think the industry is definitely lucky to have you. So we're glad you converted and fell in love. That's for sure. We need someone advocating for the sheep. It's not their fault. There's climate change.
No, far from this. I can see, interestingly, I could see on Instagram this like sponsored ad popped up, and then they were a New Zealand based company, and they were selling like woolen clothing, but really trendy woolen clothing. So it wasn't like you know, trendy. I suppose that means like, you know, fashionable, and it, like, it looked normal. So rather than like your standard, you know, grandmother's sweater and a cardigan, yeah, some of these clothes, like, I thought, oh god, and I didn't click on it. I'm skint at the minute, and I dread to think how much they cost.
Yeah,
because wool is a horrible thing to, you know, to process. But yeah, you know, and they had marketed it as carbon neutral.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, there's opportunity in the future to, you know, basically ride the carbon bandwagon. And if you can convince people not to plant your land in trees or rewild it and let it go to trash, you know, and scrub. Yeah. If you can convince them to carry on eating, you know, forage based red meat and wear carbon neutral wool, then yeah, I think we might be onto a winner.
We might be all right. My final question I think I have for you is, what advice would you have to anybody starting out? You know, was there people out there who were like, you know, very, I suppose, not snobby, but were there people who are like, oh, first generation farmer? You know, is there people who sort of like have challenged you, I think, on that? And what advice do you have to someone starting out?
Yeah, so there is a little bit of that. There's a little bit of sort of entitlement sometimes within agriculture, and you know, you can spot them a mile off, can you? But you know, it's just I always just sort of speak and treat people how I'd like to be treated, and just get on with it then, really, innit? My biggest advice to someone in my position then, you know, sort of not coming from a family farm or anything, keep at it, keep chipping away. This is the important thing. Don't jump at the first opportunity that comes your way. You know, make sure it's the right opportunity. Do it for the right reasons, because, you know, sort of there are a lot of chances out there. There are a lot of people that sort of, you know, because land is so expensive, you know, there's a lot of people that would be happy just for you to sort of, you know, maintain and improve their farm. Yeah, make sure you're working with the right person and the right sort of people. I remember, you know, when we were setting things up here, and lads that I'm friendly with, and you know, lads and girls, you know, whatever, people that I'm friendly with, you know, they were quizzing me, oh, you know, so the legal structure and how does that work? And I said, well, to be honest, I'm not bothered about that as long as I'm getting 50% of the money, you know. And Ian said that, you know, in time, you know, as he does less on a farm, you know, he's happy to you know, look at bumping up my share. I said, as long as, you know, I'm coming out of it good, that's all that matters. So don't get drawn up on, you know, like your partnership, your intercompany, whatever. Just find the right people, the right opportunity in the right place, and don't rush into anything. Don't jump at the first one that comes your way, because if it's not right, it's going to cause you a lot of hassle. You know, you want to farm for the right reasons. Like, you know, you don't want to farm because you've got to, because, you know, financial pressure or whatever.
I love that. No, thank you so much for that. Just for the time today. It's been great talking to you. I know it's been so good talking to all of these farmers all around the world. I think we've got different challenges, but at the end of the day, very similar.
Yeah, I would imagine as well. It's the attitude, and, you know, we're all similar sort of people, and we farmers. Doesn't matter where you come from. We're all pretty similar, you know, and like you said, you know, same challenges, but slightly different. And also, you know, there'll be things over here that are bad and things with you that are good, and vice versa. And I just think, yeah, we need to remember that, you know, and I know I tease you about your, you know, cheap Australian lamb in the supermarket, but we're all, you know, we're all in it together, really. And our true competitors are sort of the plant-based people, and, you know, and all these guys are going to save the world. So yeah, that's the enemy. So I think we need to, yeah, stick together and work together, and yeah, sheep's got a good future, I think.
I think so too. No, thank you so much.
Once again, thanks to Sean and to the Global Sheep Forum Next Generation Program. I know I've underestimated how incredible it would be talking to other passionate sheep people around the world, and I'm already looking forward to the next episode in this series.